Today, is there any room in our justice system for paedophile hunters? And Labour's Diane Abbott on the inspiring novelist Toni Morrison.
I think the most important thing to say about Cece is that she is so passionate and committed to what she does. She described it really nicely to me when she said she felt like she was living two lives.
I've got my Wolfpack life, my Cece Wolf, and then I've got just normal mum that does the school run, just typical mum duties.
She lives in a well-kept housing estate in a town to the east of Glasgow. There's the usual evidence of kids in the hallway, you know, toys and computer games. She's in her mid-30s herself. She was very welcoming, sorted me out with a cup of tea and a Kit Kat. And she's very funny as well. You know, she's got a great sense of humour about her, but is very serious about what she does.
What Cece does is hunt down paedophiles in her spare time.
You coming out?
And with some success. Lawyers in Scotland say her group, Wolfpack, has caused an explosion in the number of cases making it to court. But their sting operations, live-streamed on Facebook, are hugely controversial.
Come on, pedo!
From The Guardian, I'm Anoushka Astana. Today in Focus, is there a place for paedophile hunters within our justice system? Before we get going, I want to warn you that this episode does include references to abuse and some strong language. Libby Brooks, you're our Scotland correspondent. What made you decide to report on paedophile hunters?
Well, I've actually written a lot about the rehabilitation of sex offenders in my time. And I think this was something that I came to with a lot of assumptions. I had assumed that it was a pretty chaotic business, that it was mainly blokes looking for a good excuse to beat people up, that they used entrapment and other devious means to sort of con people into saying things they might normally have said. And what I discovered really challenged a lot of those assumptions.
You focused on Wolfpack. What did your research show?
Wolfpack is definitely the most active paedophile hunting group up in Scotland. It's sort of currently averaging about 4 stings a month across the country. There are plenty of other groups as well. I think the National Association of Chief Constables estimates that sort of across the UK, police deal with around 100 incidents a week, which are related to these groups. Their sort of title for them is online child abuse activist groups.
When you visited Cece at home, she taught you through a video.
So just describe what we're watching at the minute and what's going on.
What we're watching now is actually my first ever predator that I spoke to online.
I'm not
the Rangers fans, Volcots fans can feel you there now.
I've got a girlfriend.
I thought he was coming to meet my 14-year-old decoy girl, take her to a hotel. He was going to buy her new clothes, all the usual. Really quite disgusting chat. He went sexual more or less straight away as well. He declared his innocence, but he clearly wasn't.
Oh, you're taking a 14-year-old to the fucking...
I'm not.
You were.
I swear to God,
How does the sting work?
They go online, set up fake accounts, pretending to be children and young people under the age of 16.
So I would set a profile up, put a wee bit of information about myself on it, and more or less leave it dormant until people start approaching me. When I say people, it's not just men. Ladies approach as well.
And they have very strict rules in terms of how the conversation is allowed to proceed. The decoy has to keep reminding the person, the adult that is speaking to them, that they are underage.
If I'm approached by someone, I would always say, I am 13. that then gives them the opportunity to say, whoa, you're too young. No, just no way. Or I would say a good 50% or maybe more do continue talking.
But really what they are aiming toward is to get a record of these chats and then to arrange a face-to-face meeting with them. You will have the person who has been acting as the decoy coming along with a group of what Wolfpack term security. They will then confront this individual with the chat logs, i.e., you know, the very sexualized conversations that they've been having online.
Two indecent images, 30 inappropriate chats, decoys told the age numerous times, arranged to meet 7 times.
The approach is, what are you doing here? And they're a bit like rabbit in the headlights, and they're like, oh, I'm caught.
I was just going to tell her to go home. Honestly, swear to God, I'm not a pedo. I'm not, honestly.
Some deny it.
It was never going to happen. I mean,
you were still sexually a child.
I get that, but at the end of the day, that was my bad.
But you're like that, come on. I've got all of this here. Here's your picture. I'm even going to ring your mobile. It's you. And when we've got a definite identity, like usually what I'll do is this you? Like point to the picture.
And once they have got them to admit that they are in fact the person they're looking for, that's when they call the police and ask the police to come along and apprehend the individual.
And within that time, we've then got a space to speak and confront this person. When we're confronting them, I've got lots going through my head at the time, but my main objective is to ask this person why they're doing it. Like, what's your purpose? What is this?
And those videos are often being live streamed.
From the moment that the alleged perpetrator is met by the Wolfpack hunting team, they will live stream the incident to their Facebook page. What is interesting about these stings is just the millions of views that they get online.
And typically, you might see the person who's being confronted start crying.
Yeah, you'll often see people breaking down.
Be honest with us now.
I guess, you know, regardless of what they've done, it is sort of in that moment a horrific experience for them.
And some of the hunters can be quite aggressive and taunting during the stings.
Some of the videos are pretty hard to watch, it has to be said.
Move! Get out my way now! I'm exposing a pedo!
You also don't know. You know, you're not looking at the chat logs, you're not actually aware of what they have said or done or what they have suggested, and you're not aware of who they thought they were speaking to, and it's pretty murky stuff.
Wolfpack clearly do have lots of supporters. You can see that by reading some of the comments people leave on their videos on Facebook. One, for example, says, "Brilliant work, guys. Love seeing these scumbags squirm." But there's a lot of controversy surrounding paedophile hunters as well, especially around the fact that they live stream stings before any actual justice has been served. In one case involving Wolfpack last year, a man had to be placed in protective custody because of an angry mob outside his house, and there have been accusations of violence. A lot of people disagree with their approach, don't they?
They're aware that people were very critical of their activities, that they have been sort of implicated in sort of breakup of families. Indeed, sort of several suicides have been put down to people being exposed by groups like this. And they're aware that a lot of people are really sort of disgusted, in particular by the way that they post these things, the films of the stings online, in a way that is sort of completely out with any legal procedure.
How successful are they? I mean, does the work often result in arrests and convictions?
Wolfpack Hunters is the most active group up here, and it's conducted about 80 sting operations over the last 18 months, which I've managed to independently verify. Those have resulted in sort of 25 either guilty pleas or guilty verdicts so far. And the other thing that I looked at, of course, was what sorts of sentences these resulted in, and that can range from community payback orders to up to 3 years in prison. So, you know, pretty substantial sentences being handed out for these people who have been brought to the attention of the courts by these groups.
Did you end up understanding what motivates people like Cece?
So Cece explained to me that she had some experience of online grooming herself when she was growing up. And this really struck a chord with me, in that so many of the people that I interviewed who were involved with these groups also told me that either they had had experience of sexual abuse as children themselves, or said that many other people in the group had. And it does seem to be a running theme, I think, that people who have experienced this themselves then sort of go on to become involved in these groups.
Libby's research shows that the work of groups like Wolfpack mean more online abusers are being tried in court. But do they make communities feel safer? One mum spoke of mixed emotions when she clicked on a video that had been shared on a local Facebook community page.
So I clicked through to it, not really knowing what it was going to be. And it was a video of this guy who I saw every day on the school run, standing in the dark, in the rain, and being confronted by somebody who was asking him why he'd agreed to meet a 12-year-old child and insinuating it was for sexual purposes. And I just, before I knew what I was doing, I'd sort of watched 10 minutes of this, and it was really, really disturbing. It was a really horrible combination of feeling really alarmed that, you know, potentially this man had been getting up to no good with children and working at my kid's school, and also feeling like I don't actually know what this person has done. And this video has now been widely shared across the whole of the area. So whether or not he's actually done anything wrong, his life as he knows it is now over. I felt really alarmed for my children, because on the one hand, I felt very worried that they might have come into contact with somebody at school who was not responsible and who shouldn't have been there. But on the other hand, I also sort of had flash forward to them in the future, and I was thinking, I don't want them to grow up in a society where people are, you know, judged by a mob. I don't want them to ever have to experience something where they're shamed on Facebook for something they may or may not have done.
And somebody who is a paedophile hunter would say, well, the police are not catching people who are doing this. They're allowing them to teach in school. I mean, is part of you glad that you knew about it?
I think if they had that information, they should have given it to the school and they should have given it to the police. It was absolutely inappropriate of them to post it on Facebook and deal with it in the way that they did. So any gratitude that I might feel towards them is totally tempered by the fact that I think they behaved really irresponsibly.
We've heard from a mum who says that she feels this is a matter for the police. She kind of got this sense that it was like mob justice. I mean, what does Cece and the other people you spoke to think of that response?
And I think they would be really disappointed and troubled to hear that response, actually. I would say that she's very aware of the criticisms and the assumptions that are made about people who are involved in paedophile hunting groups. And she's thoughtful about it.
It's not just about going to beat somebody up. It's about making sure we're doing everything right to get them convicted for what they have done.
She feels very strongly that she is making a difference and that she is drawing the attention of the police and the courts to these sorts of grooming activities.
Online grooming is an epidemic. It's happening every single day, and nobody knows who's behind the keyboard. So it's about the exposure part of it. People don't know these people are living next door to them. I don't know they're working with them. People need to know. So that's why we live stream. You know, people need to see these faces, and if they recognise them, they know what they are.
What has the response been to the hunters by the police?
The official police response is that they would very much rather these groups weren't operating. and they would never work with them. They have great concerns about the evidence that they present, that it's not being sort of gathered properly.
So what, they think they could actually damage cases in some situations?
Yes, and it could end up that a case actually ends up being thrown out because the evidence that's been collected by these groups can be successfully undermined by defence barristers. But having said that, Cece actually said that when she was conducting a sting once, one of the local officers had asked her for advice on keeping his kids safe online.
My daughter's on that app. Is there anything I should be doing? Is it so they believe in us as well, because we're highlighting it, you know, but some of them are, leave it to us. No, but I would say from personally dealing with it, I don't know what Police Scotland said to you, but the majority of the officers that I deal with are all for it.
Do you think they're important to the local community?
One of the other things that I think it is really important to emphasise is that these stings are only one part of what the groups do. They are sort of part of a community of sort of tens of thousands of people online. They're giving advice on internet safety. They're providing support for survivors of sexual abuse. There is a real community element to it. I mean, it is very much a phenomenon of the internet. And because of that, they have this incredible reach. And so I appreciate that the stings are the things that draw the attention and also draw the most criticism. But beyond that, they are also serving this advice and sort of, I don't know, almost quasi-counselling function.
Has becoming a paedophile hunter changed Cece's life?
Yes, I think working with Wolfpack really has changed Cece's life. I think it has given her confidence and an incredible sense of purpose. I mean, I don't mean that she was purposeless before she got involved, but it is sort of quite an amazing thing to hear her talk about it. And I think it has given her some sort of sense of, I hate the word, closure, but it's allowed her to kind of, I guess, make amends with her past experience as well, and feel like she can use it to help other young people and to help other parents as well to protect their own kids.
I'm just Cece, you know, I'm just there to try my best to help, but, you know, we're there to guide them on to something else.
Has any of it convinced you that this is the sort of thing that can help make children safer? I mean, do you think the conviction rate, for example, suggests this is worthwhile?
I think that the community aspect that these groups offer in terms of sort of bringing people together, allowing them a forum to discuss concerns, share internet safety tips, all that sort of thing is sort of really laudable. I am never going to be convinced that live streaming a confrontation with an alleged abuser who has not been through the court process that sort of we have developed over centuries is a better way of dealing with these sorts of people. But I can also understand why at a point when the internet sort of seems like such a terrifying place for parents and such a sort of potentially dangerous place for children, I can completely understand the attraction of doing that. But as I said, I'm never going to be convinced that it is the right way to go about it.
Libby, thanks so much.
Thanks, Anushka. It's been good talking to you.
That was Libby Brooks, who has written up her investigation. Do read that and her other stories at theguardian.com. Coming up, the author and Nobel laureate Toni Morrison, who has died at the age of 88. Now, a moving tribute from Labour's Diane Abbott the first black woman to be elected to the British Parliament, to Toni Morrison, the first black woman to be awarded a Nobel Prize in Literature, who has died after more than five decades chronicling the African-American experience in fiction.
Toni Morrison was the queen. She had a big influence on me in my 20s. The book that introduced me to her work was The Bluest Eye. And like all of her books, she dealt with the black female experience. And in The Bluest Eye, she was talking about a young woman whose notion of beauty was basically being white and having blue eyes. And that was very much an issue and remains an issue. Black women who are prisoners of white standards of beauty. What made Toni Morrison stand out was that she came to prominence in an era where there were very few black female role models who weren't entertainers, you know, jazz singers, whether American jazz singers like Ella Fitzgerald or Chloe Lane, who was a well-known British jazz singer. Of course, not only was she not an entertainer, she was a serious writer. But whereas the singers and the performers absolutely existed in the white gaze, Toni Morrison made a point of saying her books were not intended for the white gaze. She was speaking the truth about the black experience. She said that she wanted to tell stories that had not been told. So she painted our lives in a way which didn't marginalise us or make us victims. And even though many of the women in her novels had difficult and sad experiences, they always kept their dignity, and she herself was always incredibly dignified. She had a number of amazing quotes, but one was, "If there's a book that you want to read and it hasn't been written yet, then you must write it." And I thought that was extraordinary. And she inspired a lot of black writers, particularly women writers, with that quote. I mean, I think a lot of white critics and publishers and so on were shocked at first that she didn't write about white people.
"You don't think you will ever change and write books that incorporate white lives into them substantially?"
"I have done. You can't understand how powerfully racist that question is, can you? Because you could never ask a white author, when are you going to write about black people?"
And it showed a sense of entitlement on the part of the white establishment that they didn't have to write about black people, but she had to write about white people. It's very interesting to reread her words in the Trump era. When Trump says, "Make America Great Again," he means taking America back to the era before Toni Morrison found prominence. And so it was never more important to read what Toni Morrison wrote and to understand that people of colour in the United States bring so much to the conversation and bring so much to the culture.
"If you can only be tall because somebody's on their knees, then you have a serious problem. And my feeling is white people have a very, very serious problem. And they should start thinking about what they can do about it."
That was Diane Abbott. A huge thanks to her and to Libby Brooks. That's all we have time for today. This episode was produced by Rachel Humphreys and Gary Marshall. Sound design was by Axel Cacoutier. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Nicole Jackson. We'll be back tomorrow.